This lovely Christmas hymn comes from a 2-CD set titled Lutheran Service Book Hymns and Services. We'll send you this resource of 26 hymns for any sized year-end donation to Issues Etc. You can contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and mail it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a tax-deductible online contribution at issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support at the end of 2012.
There are cases that kind of make you scratch your head. You wonder how far have things come, especially when you have doctors and other healthcare providers operating under certain assumptions about who gets care and who doesn't get care. Now, I'm not talking about the healthcare system. I'm talking about what happens right now in hospitals in the United States and also in our neighbor to the north, Canada. Joining us to talk about a right to live case before the Canadian Supreme Court, Wesley Smith. He's a regular guest. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center on Human Exceptionalism, an attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, and he's author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, did you notice that since I was last with you, I'm now blogging at National Review?
I have. In fact, I read your article there, and that's what kind of sparked our interest in this subject. We have talked about right to die cases with you many times. You say this is a right to live case. What do you mean?
Yeah, there's a case up in Canada in which a fellow named Rasuli had a terrible stroke and became substantially cognitively impaired, kind of like the Terry Schiavo situation. He's not fully unconscious, but he's significantly disabled. And the doctors want to shut off all life support. And the family is saying, no, wait. You know, he's a devout Muslim. He would want this kind of treatment. He would want his life sustained. And the case has actually gone to the Canadian Supreme Court, which will determine who has the final say in such cases, the doctors and bioethicists or the families. It's something called medical futility, or as I call it, futile care theory. And we have the same kind of situations occur sometimes here in the United States.
So explain futile care theory. How would you describe what it is? It's kind of an operating principle in these cases where doctors find themselves with patients that, and it's remarkable to talk about doctors thinking of their patients withdrawing care that is necessary for life. But
yeah, it is. It is remarkable, and it's an unfortunate confluence of two things, I believe. One is the quality of life ethic, which is in many regards supplanting the sanctity of life ethic. And the second is the issue of cost protection or cost savings in medical care. Medical futility says that if a patient or a family wants life-sustaining medical treatment, and the doctors and or bioethicists think that the quality of life that this treatment provides the patient isn't proper, meaning they think it causes the patient too much suffering or there's no chance for cure or it isn't worth the money, that the doctors can unilaterally refuse to provide it. And think about what we're talking about. We're not talking about what might be called physiological futility. In other words, let me use an extreme example. Let's say I'm your doctor and you come to me and you say, gee, Dr. Wesley, I've got an earache, take out my appendix. Well, of course, I'm not going to take out your appendix because that would be futile. In other words, physiologically, medically, taking out your appendix would not only be an invasive procedure, but it would not do anything for your earache. A much more common form of futile treatment is providing antibiotics for viral infection when antibiotics only actually helps in bacterial infections. In this case, though, the treatment isn't stopped because it isn't working, but because it is working or it might work. In other words, we're going to stop this life support because sustaining the life of the patient, which is what the life support does, is not what the doctors want. In a way, it's saying the patient is futile rather than the treatment. So it's a value judgment as opposed to a medical judgment.
In that vein, and in just a minute, I want you to compare Canada with U.S. law with regard to these things. But in that vein, I'm reading in the article that you wrote for National Review Online, and you're quoting the Canadian Critical Care Society, and they're talking about treatment only being given when it may alleviate an illness. But this is a phrase that jumped out to me, Wesley, or provide some permanent benefit. And in the case of this man who's at the center of this case, Hassan Rasooli, isn't it a permanent benefit to him to stay alive?
Yes. And exactly, and that's why I quoted that particular portion. What medical futility or futile care theory, as I call it, is saying is that saving the life, extending the life of a patient when that is what the patient wants, is not necessarily the purpose of medicine. That's a radical and dangerous assumption.
Can you compare, at least in a general way, the state of Canadian law, since this is a Canadian Supreme Court case, and the state of U.S. law on these issues?
Canadian law is vague in terms of who has the final call. In the United States, you often have the same kind of situation, but there's at least one state where it is specifically permitted, futile care, and that's Texas. In Texas, if you end up with one of these disputes, the doctor has the right under state law that was actually signed by George Bush, excuse me, when he was governor, and I can tell you why in a second, that if the doctor doesn't want to provide the care, it goes to a bioethics committee. And if the bioethics committee says that the treatment should not continue to be provided, the patient has 10 days within which to find another institution to provide the treatment. The problem is that often once, and remember, these are often very expensive patients, once the decision is made by one hospital to say no, it's very difficult to get another hospital to accept the patient. And so you've had many times where there have been some, even in the media, some very notorious cases of desperate families going as far out of Texas, even as Illinois, to look for a place to care for the patient. This is something I'm worried about. Will also start to take place under Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, where they're going to be setting up bureaucracies, they're going to set up cost-benefit boards, and I think it could end up resulting in a futile care kind of health care rationing in the coming years. It hasn't yet, but I worry that it could.
Real quickly, why did then-Governor George Bush sign that?
Well, it arose out of a legislation that was going to originally give 3 days to find another hospital. And Texas Right to Life and others said, well, if we extend that time, they tried to defeat it altogether and they didn't have the votes. So they said, if we extend the time to 10 days, we believe that that will protect patients sufficiently to prevent any kind of unilateral cutoff of care. I've talked to them. They never dreamed that one hospital might actually comply with another hospital's futile care determination. So they were caught a little bit flat-footed on that. They've tried to repeal that law several times since then, and they've never been able to quite get there because, for example, the Catholic Medical Association opposes the change in terms of a full repeal. So it's a very difficult situation.
Two quick final questions for you, Wesley. From what you know of Canadian law and of the Supreme Court that is going to consider Rasooli's case, do you expect them to uphold Rasooli's family's wishes or those of those following the Critical Care Society?
My heart says Rasooli will win. My head says he won't. It depends on how far Canada has gone down that quality of life ethic and how, remember, that's a socialistic system, a single-payer system, in other words. That is, the government pays for all the health care, and how much of an impact that might have on the Supreme Court. I don't know the details of the members of the Supreme Court, so that makes it a little hard for me to say. I think in this country, if a similar case came to our Supreme Court, it would be a 5-4 decision in favor of the patient. But I do think that in our court, we have 4 members who would rule against the patient, because I think we're moving into a technocratic future, and that's certainly going to impact medicine and our perception of the value of human life.
You say finally that if Rasooli in Canada is forced to die, Canadians will have lost their right to live.
Right. I mean, if you don't have the right to say, I want, this is not, this is not elective treatment. It used to be elective treatment is something that, you know, you could live without it. You could live or die, you live without it. But this is non-elective treatment, what used to be called non-elective treatment. Without this treatment, he is almost certainly going to die. And if they can take that away from you against your will, doesn't it mean you don't have a right to live?
Real quickly, with about
30... In fact, doesn't it mean that there's a quasi-duty to die being imposed on the sickest patients?
With only 30 seconds here, if the Canadian court decides against Rasuli's family, does that mean in Canada your doctor gets to decide whether or not you get any kind of life-sustaining treatment?
It would certainly appear to be that way. There was another case in Canada of a baby who they tried to force off, and Priests for Life were able to get this baby to be treated here in the United States, and the baby lived about 9 months. Now, feudal care theory says that was not something that was worthwhile, and I hope all of your audience thinks, yes, it was.
Folks, you can read Wesley Smith's column about this right to live case in Canada at issuesetc.org. Go to Listen on Demand. Wesley Smith is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, an attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, and author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America. Thanks for your time, Wesley.
Good talking to you again. Merry Christmas.
Folks, let's review today's lineup that we've sent before you. It's been a busy day, especially the second hour here at Issues, Etc. Pastor Tim Rosso gave us an hour in the first part of this program talking about classical Christian worship and the Book of Revelation. We had Mark Rienzi on from the Beckett Fund to talk about an Illinois court upholding the conscience clause for pharmacists with respect to the morning after pill. Serge Trifkovic joined us. We talked about Christians in Egypt, and we talked about John the Baptist, Pastor Ross Engel, and just finished this up with Wesley Smith on this right to live case in Canada. The breadth of topics, we know you appreciate it, and if you do, that we cover here on Issues, Etc., please consider making a year-end tax-deductible donation. We're currently about $40,000 short of making our budget this year, and you can contribute online, issuesetc.org. You can donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues, Etc. Send it to Issues, Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Now, for any sized year-end gift, we're going to send you a CD of two of my sermons, one on Christmas and one on the Confession of St. Peter. We'll also send you the CD, Lutheran Service Book, Hymns and Services. And as always, thanks for listening and thanks for keeping us in mind when you consider your year-end giving this year. Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., we're going to continue our series on the historic liturgy, talking with Pastor Will Whedon about the Lord's Prayer. And we'll also discuss the fourth century martyr, St. Lucia, with Pastor Whedon. That's tomorrow on Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the divine service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Does a Christian have a different reason for voting than a non-Christian? I've written an article for the latest Issues, Etc. journal titled Vote for the Other Guy. You can read it by subscribing to the Issues, Etc. journal. Just look for the subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The latest journal also details Edie Wadsworth's journey from evangelical mysticism to the present tense gospel of the Reformation. Subscribe to the online Issues, Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.